focused on finding and targeting their ideal customers at scale. I'm your host, Monique Ruiz. This month, we're talking about the hottest topic in all of marketing, artificial intelligence, or AI for short. As you may know, Claritas acquired an AI company last year, and since then, our new innovations and enhancements to our existing solution suite have absolutely exploded. But AI can have a tendency to be a bit of a buzzword in the industry, so we wanted to sit down and essentially make it all make sense. We'll explain what AI is and what it's used for in the marketing world, the nearly impossible to believe success metrics that companies are seeing when they incorporate AI into their strategy. We'll discuss the current challenges and shortcomings of AI, and we'll share why we've started an AI beta program and what it's all about, plus a whole lot more. With me today to answer questions around all of these topics is our Chief AI Officer, Rex Briggs. He's a first-timer on this podcast, but you have likely seen him speaking at industry conferences you've attended, asked him questions during the webinar series he hosts, or even seen him on your TV screen or read one of his books. So I'd like to welcome Rex Briggs to the podcast. Hi, Rex. Welcome to the Marketing Insider.
Monique, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. You're a name that is probably as big in the world of AI as Taylor Swift is in the world of pop music. But if anyone listening to this podcast doesn't know of you yet, would you mind just giving us a quick introduction of your background and your role here at Claritas?
Sure. I am the Chief AI Officer at Claritas, and my background in AI goes back to when I was the first director of research at Wired, where I was doing neural networks and personalization. I was fortunate enough to, after I left Wired, to continue to work in that area and ended up on a cover story of Wired in 1998 called The New You. It was all about how data and personalization would change the marketing landscape. One story was about the work that I was doing. The other one was about what Amazon was doing. And the third theme was what the NSA was doing with your data. Wow. So it was an interesting early days of technology. I've written three books, they've been required reading at places like Wharton and so forth. Most of that focused on ad effectiveness, which had machine learning built into it. But I really got to come back to AI with some of the work with my latest book, which I'm co-authored with my son, Caleb. It was actually a lot of his idea, and that will be published by MIT in August. It's called The AI Conundrum. And I've been doing a lot of research in that area, which got me interested in both Arts AI, the company Claritas acquired, and Claritas itself because of the rich persona data from Prism and so forth, which I saw a lot of opportunity to do interesting things with AI.
Nice. So I want to jump right in because I only have you for a limited time today, and I have a long list of questions for you. So let's start with the basics. I think it's fair to say that AI for use in marketing is still a very new concept to a lot of companies. And to the average consumer, there's often a perceived notion that AI falls squarely in a bucket of science fiction movies featuring robots that suddenly gain consciousness. So for our listeners who are only just hearing about AI for the use in marketing for the first time, maybe on this podcast, what are some of the most common use cases that you're seeing?
Well, the three ways to think about it would be description, classification, and prediction. Description is AI can really bring to life a lot of our data, and there are many applications for AI to find patterns within the data as well. The second one, classification, is something that Arts AI was doing, and after I'd sold my big data analytics company and I was donating my brain to science and working on the pandemic with the White House and Ad Council and my own state government, I found that the ability for the AI to classify which message you go to which person could increase people getting good authoritative information and engaging. Mm-hmm. So that classifications are really important. And then prediction is a key one, the ability for AI to predict the messages you might engage with, the direction of the KPI or your business and so forth is a very powerful use case for AI.
Definitely. And we're using AI to enhance what marketers are already doing. So for an example, an average marketer might be able to produce a handful of creatives in a given amount of time for an ad campaign. But with the addition of AI, you can suddenly produce multiple times that output and different iterations of the original creative. So much more than a human is physically capable of. But can you talk a little bit about how this AI personalization for creative optimization works and maybe what some of the pros or cons of this approach might be?
Yeah, what you're describing is generative AI. And generative AI is an outgrowth of the prediction capability of AI, oftentimes predicting the next word or the next token to be technically correct. Mm-hmm. And Claritas has taken that and said, okay, well, we can help develop scripts for a marketer, you know, that wants to run an audio ad. And we can use the ads that we know have been effective in the past. We can tune it with persona data, the brief from the agency, and generate an advertisement. And then that script can be approved by a human and hit another button, and that generates a synthetic voice, a male voiceover, a female voiceover, et cetera. And then hit another button, and it generates the music that might go along with that for that persona in that context. And that creates an ad, oftentimes for a very low cost, very, very quickly, like in minutes. You don't have to have generative AI to do AI personalization, but if you don't have more than one version, there's nothing for the AI to optimize. So the ability to create more and more ads, either for audio or for email, helps the next part of the AI service, the AI personalization, find different patterns of which message should go to which person more efficiently and effectively. It also helps boost inclusivity. You can have different voices that connect with different people in different ways. So I think that's going to be a big benefit. I think one of the risks is that you might not want to be putting voice actors out of work. You might want to have generative AI create a script, but you might want to then hand that off to a human voiceover service. And so that's actually built into the software, so you have the optionality. In fact, some of the customers are paying voice actors to allow them to synthesize their voice with AI so that they don't have to read all the text. Their voice still produces the sound quality, but it's generated by an AI trained on a human voice where the human actor is getting paid and compensated for their use. So I think that's probably one of the watch out ones to really think about which direction you want to go. There's a lot of options of how you use AI to represent us rather than to replace us.
Yeah, that's a good point there, especially the inclusivity piece, because we'll get into a question later on. There's some issues with AI that we've talked about in the past where that might come into play. But let me just make a quick plug for our listeners. So I recently had the chance to sit down for a fireside chat with Claritas's SVP of AI personalization, Don Sklenka, and we did a bit of a deeper dive into AI personalization in that interview. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, it should be posted in the resources section on our website. So I encourage you to check that out, and I will also link it in the show notes as well. But Rex, back to you. On our website and in our own marketing campaigns, we've been sharing some metrics that our clients have achieved when incorporating AI in different ways into their marketing strategy. So I'll go ahead and rattle a few off now for our listeners' sake. So 20% boost in customer engagement, 15% increase in conversion rates, 10% decrease in marketing spend, et cetera, et cetera. That's just to name a few. That said, though, when we had our VP of Partner Success, Caleb Mansfield, on the podcast recently, he estimated that only about 1% of ads on the market today are powered by AI. Given these impressive success metrics that we're seeing, what do you think is the reason why we aren't seeing full AI adoption in marketing yet? And what do you think it will take to get more companies on board?
We are really in the early innings of this ball game. And I use that example because we've just launched with Major League Baseball with AI personalization. And that will be the first, that's right, the first few teams are using that now. As they see that success, then more teams will adopt it. And it will then be a big part of their go forward way that they help tell people about baseball games coming up and sell tickets. Mm-hmm. So you typically have this need to do industry research and to see what's working. And as people see it working, then you know, okay, it might start with Major League Baseball there first, but then maybe NFL or NBA looks at that as well. And then that influences other people in the industry. And you typically will see a diffusion cycle of a new innovation take place, especially in marketing. It usually takes a couple of years. We've seen this movie before with mobile advertising, with social media, with digital ads themselves. In fact, I've been involved in every single one of those major new research initiatives, inventing the methodologies to measure it so that we could see whether it should scale or not. Part of the reason why I took the position at Claritas was because I wanted to be part of that transformation again. I had done that. I met Zuckerberg early on. I met, you know, the founders at Google, the early people that pioneered internet digital advertising. And I really saw this AI personalization as much bigger than anything that has come before. So we're just in the early stages, and I would say, get involved. Now's the time where you really make the competitive differentiation by being ahead of the curve rather than being on the late side of the curve in adoption.
I feel like some people are scared to be early adopters to newer technology, and others just aren't as up to date as to what's available for them. So it takes listening to podcasts like this, seeing articles and publications they read to help them realize that, hey, there's a better, more efficient way to do what you're already doing today. But keeping with the theme of a helping hand as I transition, as part of our AI transformation at Claritas, we first introduced Claire, which is our AI-powered virtual assistant, and I'll pop a link in the description box where you can find out more about Claire. But now we're rolling out AI-powered personas based on our segmentation model, starting with Prism Premier. So for years, we've provided storyboards to clients that are intended to bring the segments to life. And by the way, clients absolutely love them and our analytics team who custom creates them. But the one downside is that the storyboards are static. Now we're moving into the next era by providing that deeper audience insight our clients know, love, and expect from us, but in an interactive way. So tell us more about this new innovation to an existing capability. It's brand new to me too. So just like the listeners are probably having their ears perked up, I am too. I want to know, how do these new personas benefit marketers in a different way than what we were doing before?
I think of it as the ability to talk with your data. And we didn't have that before. And I've used Prism. I mean, I studied it in college 30 years ago. I mean, Prism's been around for 50 years. It's an amazing capability. In fact, it was one of the big motivators for me to introduce Arts AI and Claritas together, was I thought if you put together those capabilities of AI personalization and personas and all that rich data and identity graph, you could have a really, you could do a lot of good for a lot of marketers trying to help make their lives easier and connect more with the different consumers. If you think about what's happening right now within Claritas, is you can go in, see who your campaign's reaching by Prism persona, and see who's converting, and you can see which ones are converting at the highest rates, which ones are converting at the lowest rates, and then you can ask them why. What could you do in your product or in your category that might be better? You might ask about whether price or service is more important to them. And technically what's happening is what's called retrieval augmented generation. These named chatbots, they name themselves based on their data and interesting patterns they see within the data. They are able to really reference all the 5,000 plus data variables that we have and answer whether or not they're going to be more price sensitive or more service sensitive, and other, all kinds of other different types of interesting questions that you might ask a focus group. You can do that immediately at a click of the button and get data back from all of the Claritas information that's embedded within these personas. It really brings them to life in a way.
Yeah, it's so cool. I've seen a video when you unveiled it in our Cincinnati office. So I'm excited to see more and see what else is coming out. Another shameless plug here. If you're going to be at the Financial Brand Forum in Las Vegas towards the end of May, which Rex is speaking at, make sure to stop by Claritas's booth, which is B322. We're going to be showcasing some of these personas live and in a very interesting way. Again, check the show notes for details, but look out for that. So I'm segueing myself into my next question without realizing it. Since you joined Claritas less than a year ago, you've been speaking at industry conferences on just about a monthly cadence, in addition to holding virtual AI-focused webinars called What's New, What's Next. How have your physical and virtual speaking sessions been received? What's some of the feedback that you're getting or the kinds of questions you're being asked? And what have been the topics that have been getting the most positive responses from the listening audiences?
The most powerful part has been showing people both the strengths and weaknesses of AI, mm-hmm. understanding where it's really useful immediately today. And definitely AI personalization, the ability to interact with personas, the ability to predict where your business is going, and then see what type of optimizations you can do immediately in the software, in the platform, has been really well received. The parts that we are also trying to educate people about is, especially when you think about generative AI and trying to create images or videos, is the ways in which they can be biased. And bias is deeply embedded in the models because they're trying to make a prediction, and the prediction, it oftentimes aims for the center of the distribution. That can leave out people of color, for example. It can leave out different ethnicities. It can leave out basically anything that you consider as diversity, especially mm-hmm. if there's a fairly small percentage of that diversity within the overall population can oftentimes be left out. On the other hand, you've seen controversy where Gemini, Google's product, where they tried to make sure that they had diversity built in, but they did it in a very ham-fisted way. And so you've got strange things like racially diverse founding fathers for the U.S., which it wasn't that racially diverse, unfortunately.
Right.
So the being aware of how AI works in the prompting and the whole workflow, I think we're trying to educate more people about it so that they make more effective use of it. But definitely by far the biggest thing people have really caught their imaginations is some of our work in personas where they begin to see and chat with the personas for the first time. And they're just sort of mesmerized in a way in how intelligent the answers are, how fluid they are, and how well they represent the actual underlying data that Claritas is known for.
It's really cool that you're keeping everyone in the loop as to what's going on, because sometimes companies are a little bit nervous to give timelines on new products or solutions because they just don't want something to happen and ruin that timeline. And I used to be on the product side, so I get it. But from a client perspective, it makes you feel like you're part of the development process. And as part of your virtual webinars, you've been highlighting our AI beta program. So can you tell us what the program is all about? And is there a way for even our podcast listeners to get involved if they're interested?
Yes. Yeah, so my development philosophy is you divide things into three development tranches. Tranche one is 0 to 1. Second tranche is 1 to 10. And then the third one's 10 plus. 0 to 1 is very hard. It's where you go from nothing existing and having to create it for the first time. And that then shifts fairly quickly to the 1 to 10. And the 1 to 10 is an important area that's oftentimes overlooked. And it's okay, you've developed something like this persona, never existed before. Now you can talk to your data. But we want to really learn from the first 10 people that get hands-on with it, because we begin to identify interesting edge cases. Somebody used it that way. I didn't expect them to ask that kind of a question. How do we how do we help make the AI smarter in answering something like that? Or a great example, we had this great map that showed where all the personas were and where the high heat map of conversions by country. And we were doing it for the Tampa Bay Rays. And there was a heat map in Idaho and in Montana. And we're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. The conversions should all be mostly in Florida.
Right.
Well, it turns out that the heat map, there was only 12 impressions delivered in Idaho, and one of them clicked and bought a ticket. So that was a very, very high conversion rate. And so it's like, okay, well, now we know we need to create an editing rule where we'll only show the heat map if you have at least 5,000 impressions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that type of learning cycle that we want to do hand in glove with the Claritas customers. So if you are, we call them, working with friendlies, you want to work with people who are comfortable with technology and using something for the first time and realize that's not going to be perfect, but they want to help figure out how to fine tune it for how it works for their business. And so if you want to be one of those 1 to 10, We'd love to work with you and engage with you hands on. I get very involved with that. The developers get very involved with it. We do fairly fast, rapid cycles. And then, you know, really by the time we've worked with about 10, and we get to that 10 plus, it's really ready for people to use it without any hand holding, you know, in general release and fairly broadly. But it's a great opportunity to shape some of the direction and make sure that the use case works for you and your business to get involved with us early on in that in those beta programs.
You go to a company because you want products or solutions or services that benefit you. So what better way to make sure that happens than getting in early and being part of the beta program? We've been highlighting a lot of the positives of AI, and you did mention a few negatives with bias. You know, every new and emerging technology, there's bound to be some issues to work out. So I've talked about this with a few of my recent podcast guests, but I'm curious to hear an expansion on your thoughts being in the position that you are. What are some more of the biggest challenges that you're seeing with AI, and how are we at Claritas and the industry as a whole working to overcome them?
Yeah, with bias, we are leading with AIM, which is ANA's inclusivity committee that's really focused on how do we make sure that marketing is representative and has a positive overall societal contribution. And I want to encourage people to work with us on that as well. We are gathering data with what I call authentic voices, which is how do you think about your own identity? When do you notice it? How does it play a role? And I'm doing that because I think that AI, if we just give it data from a survey, it really kind of boxes it in compared to how rich and diverse we think about our own identity. For example, I'm married to, for 30 years now, to a woman who roughly identifies as Hispanic. She was highly acculturated because her father, who spoke Spanish and read Spanish newspapers, made sure his daughters only spoke English at home. So she had, one journey. We have twin boys. Interestingly, one of them identifies as Hispanic and speaks Spanish pretty well. The other doesn't. Didn't put it on his college application, doesn't use it that way. They were born in the same womb, yet they think about their identity differently.
Yeah.
So I think that, you can do the 23andMe and figure out where you're from, but how you think about where you're from and what that reference is very personal. And I want us to do a better job at capturing that in some of our data and the way that we create personas, the way we create audience segmentation as we go forward. So that's one big effort. The other one is around privacy. We are doing an experiment now with Syracuse University, Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and we'll do it with some other universities where we're learning about these agents that get to know you. And the idea is maybe instead of us creating personas purely based upon the data and finding sort of this average persona within a neighborhood, we create personas that are based upon real people, and that real people, that data is represented in our data sets. And it's a powerful and interesting idea. And if you're interested in experimenting with us with it, we're happy to share where we're at in that process and let you interact with one of these agents. But I think when you interact with it, you realize how quickly they get to know you so incredibly well that it means that we have a social responsibility to ensure people's privacy with that data. Mm-hmm. So it could be used to help people decide what type of messages and marketing they should get. Like, I personally would like to lose 10 pounds, and I'd love to have advertising that helps me be more fit and exercise and be more oriented in that way. That would be great. I'd welcome that. And I'd buy the products that help, align with that. But I might not want to share that with everybody.
Right.
I just did on your podcast, but it might be, there are certain might be other goals and objectives where those are much more private. And so I think we are trying to chart a path to giving consumers control over their data and complete agency over the AI that they interact with. And so, stay tuned with us on that area, because if we can create the kind of breakthrough I'd like to create, then I think that will be something beneficial to the entire industry.
Right. So I think we're getting close to the end of our conversation today, but I just wanted to end on keeping the positivity going here. Are there any new big AI innovations that we're working on at Claritas that we haven't mentioned yet that you want to share with our listening audience?
Yeah, I think the most exciting part that we are working on, that if some of the listeners want to see it firsthand and interact with it, would be this TwinZ .ai project that we're doing. I'll let people reach out and connect with it. I think the other big one is I'm rethinking how incrementality should work.
Okay.
And I've got a great data science team that I'm working very closely with. But in the old world, you just do kind of the here's your ad versus a ghost ad, and here's the lift that we calculate. But in the new world, everything becomes incredibly fragmented and personal. And so you might have a different call to action than I have. We might have different images to our ads. We might intersect with the ads on different websites at different times that would be ideal for us to interact with them. And so everything becomes highly fragmented and personal. And we need to have an incrementality structure that supports that way of analyzing and looking at data, rolling it up and rolling it down from the high level, how the campaign do, to have this specific message with this specific person at this specific point in time. How did that do? What's my benchmark? And what would be optimal? We're going to be starting to do some more R&D work to test that out over the next 90 days. I think we'll have something that will be really industry path setting for the rest of the entire industry for how we should be thinking about incrementality in the age of AI.
Very cool. The sky is the limit. Thank you for joining me today on the Marketing Insider. It has been an illuminating conversation, and I appreciate you making room in your crazy busy schedule to educate me and our listeners.
Thank you, Mini, for having me on the show.
Of course. And as always, of course, I want to thank those of you that are listening at home or on the go. If you've not already, please take a moment to follow the Marketing Insider so you never miss an episode. Rate us 5 stars on your podcast app of choice, our favorite being Spotify, and share us with a friend or colleague so we can keep the conversation going. And with that, we'll see you next time with a brand new episode. Bye now.